This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We've seen some media reports, in particular The Guardian in the UK, quoting Oxfam, saying it's very concerned about how emergency funding is being used to supposedly stop mass migration from Africa to Europe.
That's Josephine McKenna in Rome, the latest on the story coming up.
Also, there are reports of a violent crackdown on protesters in Eritrea's capital, Asmara, and the political situation in Kenya remains tense as incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta wins a repeat election that was boycotted by his main opponent, Raila Odinga.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
There are reports of a violent crackdown on protesters in Eritrea's capital, Asmara. The U.S. Embassy reported there were gunshots at the protest yesterday, although the source of the gunfire is unknown. Videos uploaded to YouTube show demonstrators fleeing along Asmara's downtown streets with sounds of gunshots audible. Members of the opposition living in Ethiopia today reported several deaths among protesters, but that cannot be verified. Unverified reports say protesters were angry over a government order to close the Daya Islamic School. According to Radio Irena, a station run by Eritrean journalist in Paris, more than 100 students from the school protested yesterday. Radio Irena says government forces used sticks and firearms to disperse the crowd. Eritrea's Minister of Information, Yamane Gebremichael, downplayed the protest, calling it a small demonstration by one school in Asmara, dispersed without any casualty. Protests are rare in Eritrea, where free speech and political demonstrations are severely curtailed.
The political situation in Kenya remains tense following the declaration of incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta as winner of a repeat election that was boycotted by his main opponent, Raila Odinga. Only about 40% of eligible voters cast their ballots. Odinga calls the repeat polls a sham and a vote of no confidence to Kenyatta's government, citing lower turnout. Odinga says his opposition coalition, the National Super Alliance, NASA, will become a resistance movement. He adds that it will be a nonviolent movement and will follow the provisions of the Constitution. Charles Kanyama is a prominent lawyer and an advocate of the High Court of Kenya. VOA's Ruben Chama asked him what the Constitution says about protests.
The Constitution allows various forms of protest, so long as they are peaceable, so long as they are unarmed, so long as they do not involve a violation of the law, whether the Constitution itself or other written law. So one can utilize one's imagination to determine what forms of picketing, protesting, and boycott they would engage in. But the Constitution is clear that all forms of discrimination on the basis of ethnicity, race, gender, and so on, and even on the basis of political opinion, are contrary to the Constitution. And the Constitution is clear that there is a legal framework that one has to obey to the extent that that legal framework is consistent with the Constitution. So that would mean that if you have laws like in the Penal Code outlawing or prohibiting taking of human life, damage or destruction to property, then one would need to comply with those provisions.
Both leading parties, the ruling party Jubilee and also the NASA coalition, refuse to negotiate. Is there any common ground between the two parties where you see any compromises that could be made?
The first thing I would say is that both the Jubilee Party and the NASA coalition are found in our 12th parliament. Because we have a parliamentary system that works with the presidential democracy in our country, that is the first forum in which there can be dialogue and discussion. I do agree that for the NASA coalition, their confidence in the parliamentary discussions is not very high, because Jubilee Party has a substantial majority, and so they believe Jubilee will dominate that avenue. NASA have proposed setting up People's Assembly. They've proposed engaging the county assemblies, where again both political coalitions are found, although in some Jubilee dominates, in others NASA dominates. So all those are avenues where they can talk to each other, and it is also possible for them to organize other structured and unstructured forms of dialogue. We did see that during the agitation for reforms in the Electoral Commission and change of the commissioners of the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, that the street protests of NASA, at that time it was the Cord Coalition, generated some form of structured dialogue that took place through Parliament. So I think that is something that can possibly work as well.
The Supreme Court annulled the results of the first election and was not able to form a quorum to hear the request for the postponement of the rerun. Does the Supreme Court or any other national institution have a role to play in diffusing the current crisis? Would it be up to regional bodies like the AU to mediate?
I would at this stage be very reluctant to call for bodies outside the country, like the African Union, for purposes of mediation or any such thing. I think every country goes through moments of political crisis of one kind or the other. So only in the case of really grave crisis, when the country lacks the institutions to cope with these situations, do you find countries having to subject themselves to external intervention. I don't think Kenya is at that stage.
That was Charles Kanjama, a Kenyan prominent lawyer and an advocate of the High Court of Kenya. He was speaking to VOA's Ruben Chama in Nairobi.
Liberia's Supreme Court has ordered a halt to preparations for next week's presidential runoff vote while it considers a legal challenge to the first round. In its order late yesterday, the court called a hearing tomorrow with election commission officials. The Liberty Party filed the challenge. Its candidate is Charles Brumskine, the third-place candidate in last month's vote. The challengers accuse President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of improperly interfering in the first round by meeting with election officials. She denies these allegations. The Unity Party of Vice President Joseph Boakai, who was the second-place candidate, says it endorses the court challenge. Boakai is scheduled to face the first-place candidate, George Weah, in the runoff on November 7th. The runoff was required because no candidate earned more than 50% of the vote. The court's ruling at this point doesn't necessarily cancel or delay the second round.
The Norwegian Refugee Council, NRC, says people displaced by violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo's Tanganyika province face appalling living conditions. The NRC says the province is on the brink of a deadly disaster. It says over 500,000 people in Tanganyika province, or 1 in 5 people, have fled their homes because of intercommunal violence over the past 15 months. The majority of families are sheltering in the Kalimi and Nunzu areas. The NRC reports that thousands of displaced families have little or no shelter. With the rainy season well underway, communities face the risk of disease outbreaks. The priorities, according to Ulrike Blom, the agency's DRC country director, is providing community shelter, clean water, and sanitation. She says immediate action is needed to prevent avoidable deaths.
The European Union says it intends to allocate $47 billion for Africa in its next budget. European Parliament President Antonio Tajani announced the plan yesterday. However, the EU has been urged to shed more light on how it spends emergency money intended to curb migration from Africa to Europe. The international humanitarian agency Oxfam will publish a report next month that will call on the European Commission to boost transparency about the EU-Africa Emergency Trust Fund. EU leaders created the fund in 2015. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about the EU announcement and the concern over lack of clarity on its funding.
The head of the European Parliament, Antonio Tajani, has spoken at a press conference talking about how much is going to be allocated by the EU for development and investment in Africa. And this is part of the European Union's approach to trying to stop the flow of migration that we've seen in recent years as people flee their countries, flee poverty and war and other issues and try to reach Europe. Now, he says 40 billion euros is needed and the current allocation of 3.7 billion euros is not enough. Now, he says words won't convince migrants to stay at home. We have to give them the chance to have a decent life in their home countries. But of course, there's plenty of debate about whether that really happens and where that EU money is being spent.
And also, I understand that Oxfam will be publishing a report where they're calling for the EU to shed some light on how it's spending its money. Can you tell us about this?
We've seen some media reports, in particular The Guardian in the UK, quoting Oxfam, saying it's very concerned about how emergency funding is being used to supposedly stop mass migration from Africa to Europe. Oxfam is going to call on the European Commission to boost transparency of what's known as the EU Africa Emergency Trust Fund. Now, that was created by EU leaders in 2015 to stop the flow of migrants across the Mediterranean. Now, that fund has apparently made available around 1.9 billion euros so far for projects in 26 African countries. But Oxfam is concerned about the lack of clarity here and fears that some of this money is being used and repackaged as border security without any real investment in development in these particular countries.
Did Tajani give any specifics on how the 40 billion euros would be spent?
No, it's a little early for that, but it's certainly an indication of how the EU is committed to spending more to stop the flow of migrants. We've seen investment, particularly in Libya, strengthening the Libyan Coast Guard, and we know that that already is having a major impact in slowing the flow of migrants. So it'll be interesting to see where the EU intends to allocate this money. Incidentally, the number of migrants landing in Italy, the number of migrants is down 30% compared to the same period last year. And a 78% fall in the number of migrants arriving in Italy was recorded in October alone.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Ihis Wuhib, 18 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. There are reports of a violent crackdown on protesters in Eritrea's capital, Asmara. The political situation in Kenya remains tense as incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta wins a repeat election that was boycotted by his main opponent, Raila Odinga. And according to the Norwegian Refugee Council, people displaced by violence in DRC's Tanganyika province are on the brink of a deadly disaster. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Tunisian police today arrested a suspected Islamist militant who stabbed two officers in front of the parliament building in Tunis. The Interior Ministry says he was known to adhere to extremist thinking that views members of the security forces as tyrants. One of the victims had a neck wound and was taken to the hospital and admitted to the intensive care unit. In 2015, the country was the target of several attacks claimed by the Islamic State group that killed 72 people, 59 of them foreign tourists. The country has been under a state of emergency since November 2015 after an attack killed 12 presidential guards in the capital. Since its 2011 revolution, which sparked the Arab Spring, Tunisia has faced a series of jihadist attacks that have claimed the lives of more than 100 soldiers and police.
At least 8 people are dead and more than a dozen wounded in New York City's Lower Manhattan after a motorist veered head-on into pedestrians and cyclists yesterday afternoon in what authorities are calling an act of terror. The suspect is originally from Uzbekistan, and police today said notes he had written indicated he acted in the name of the Islamic State militants. Ramon Taylor reports.
Terror struck along West Side Highway just blocks from Manhattan's towering World Trade Center when a man drove a rented truck onto a busy bike path, pummeling through pedestrians, cyclists, and into a high school bus.
This was an act of terror, and a particularly cowardly act of terror aimed at innocent civilians.
Authorities have identified the suspect as Saifulu Saipov, a 29-year-old Uzbek national. He remains in police custody at a New York hospital.
The driver of the truck, a 29-year-old male, exited the vehicle brandishing two handguns. A uniformed police officer assigned to the 1st Precinct confronted the subject and shot him in the abdomen.
For some witnesses, the chaos was reminiscent of images of deadly attacks from across Europe.
It always seems really distant, but then when it's right next to you, obviously it's really shocking and disturbing, and you don't want it to happen to anybody.
Others were left in disbelief. College student Jake Saunders, who barely missed a train at a crucial moment, considers himself lucky.
If I had made that train, I would be like right where the shooting is, like right there, because that was my destination where the shooting was.
The incident took place as parents readied their children to visit neighbors and receive candy treats as part of the annual Halloween celebration.
Kids are, you know, trick-or-treating and bomb sniffers in the building. Kids have become way too accustomed to this.
But parents across the city insisted the incident would not stand in the way of their evening plans with the kids.
The cowards that have made this terrorist act, it's really cannot stop our lives, and we cannot let them take over our lives. And in spite of all the mixed feelings and the sadness and the fear, you know, everything has to go on. And if we stop, then they won, and we can't let that happen.
Ramon Taylor, VOA News, New York.
Violent crime rates have plummeted in New York City in recent years. In 1990, 2,245 murders were reported. In 2016, that number had dropped to 335. Yet violence, especially gun violence, still takes a heavy toll on the Big Apple youth and those they leave behind. Recently in Harlem, a grassroots support and advocacy group called Harlem Mothers Save gathered mourners and local officials to grieve, to console, and to express their commitment to ending the bloodshed. VOA's Adam Phillips was there.
It's a sunny morning outside the humble storefront headquarters of Harlem Mothers Save. The word save is short for Stop Another Violent End. Jackie Rowe Adams, the group's founder, approaches a makeshift podium and welcomes the 100 or so people seated here on folding chairs, eager to commemorate and remember loved ones killed by violence.
We want folks to see how many people is using this day of remembrance and how important it is to us to remember our loved ones that we lost. All the murdered victims. Let's give it a scream.
Over the next hour, local officials and community activists offer their condolences and speak about the tragedy of gun violence, especially among youth. New York City Police Commissioner James O'Neill speaks to VOA moments before addressing the crowd.
Each time there's a murder in New York City, I take it personally. If you look where we are as a city, we're doing okay, but one murder is one murder too many. I do meet the parents, I see them, and you see it in their faces, and it's something that you hope that time heals it, but I don't think it does. They're absolutely devastated. It's important that New Yorkers take a day to reflect on that and what it really means.
The emotional heart of the morning comes when parents, friends, and neighbors recite the names of those they've lost.
Devon Stitwell, Giovanni Smith,
Anthony Rowe, Roosevelt Ewell,
Jonathan Bell, Cheyenne Baez.
Some, like Herman and Sarah, also say a word about what happened to their kids and offer thanks to Jackie Rowe Adams and the Harlem Mothers Save community.
My son was murdered right in front of my face. This guy ran up to my son and shot my son 4 times. And he turned around and he shot me 3 times too. My son died in my arms.
My son was shot 4 times in the polo grounds, 4 times in his back. And I thank God for Jackie. She found me. Whenever I come, them doors are open. And I thank God for that. This day is really lifting up my spirit.
Jackie Rowe Adams says she founded Harlem Mothers Save in 2006 with four other mothers after her own two sons were murdered. She says her first son was 17 when he was gunned down because his assailants didn't like the way they thought he looked at them.
And they followed him and shot him. 16 years later, my son got killed, my other son, by a 13-year-old, shot in the head. So who would have thought that? So I said, what am I going to do? I can't bring back my sons, but I could help another mother, another father, another family from feeling the pain and hurt that we're feeling. Sometimes they don't know where to go, and they think they all alone. But Harlem Mothers opens the door to let them know you're not alone. You're not alone.
Some mourners channel their grief through community action. James Gary Sr., a former custodian, volunteers at Harlem Mothers Save by keeping the offices clean and welcoming. But even happy memories of his grandson still hurt a lot.
I remember him small when he was young. He was full of joy and happiness and always played basketball and always glad to see me. Always said, Grandpa, Grandpa, how you doing? And he was a loving grandson, and he had a son of his own.
Milagros Ortega has turned her brokenheartedness into a fiery commitment to get guns off the streets. Her latest project is to help groups like Harlem Mothers Save prevent proposed federal legislation to allow people from conceal and carry states to cross state lines, including into New York State, which has some of the nation's toughest gun laws.
It's difficult, to be honest. If I can make an impact and my voice be heard, I do what I can. But it's a difficult task, and I praise God every day that I'm able to move forward and let these people know that you're just not going to get away with just murdering our kids.
When the recital of names is finished, Jackie Rowe Adams passes out blood-red balloons to release into the blue sky. It's a way of saying that those who grieve here on earth love and remember their loved ones in heaven and will fight to make a safer world.
One, two, three, set them up!
Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Keith Holmes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.